Mini episode 1891 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1891. You have with you here today two of your favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, Rick Morris and Derek Allen, and we are here to talk football, as per always when we are together, and looking at the 2025 NFL stretch run, and it has been a very, very, very chaotic type season here, one that I'm sure that good old Maya Master can identify with here. Chaotic Goodest on Twitter. Go check the handle there for her. And Derek, the season is nothing, it seems to be. Nothing if not chaotic the way that it has gone. And you see all these different, you know, comparisons out there. Not since 2011 has there been this level of, you know, and other years like that, and years when lower seeds have kind of come through the playoffs to do it. But this has been a year where, yeah, so many things that none of us saw coming at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, it's definitely been one of the most, I guess, interesting seasons and compelling in a while. It's also, I mean, cool that I think it's going to be the first time, I think I said I saw 8 years, that there'll be a unique quarterback representing the AFC. Because obviously we've had in the, you know, going into the Super Bowl, because it's been Mahomes, 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 Burrow, Mahomes, and then you get to the Bradys, and then obviously you keep going back to the Peyton and Flacco. Like, it's just been those like sticks for the past, like, however, 10, 12 years. So that's going to be really cool to kind of see who comes out of that. We're going to get some new blood for once. And then obviously I'd say, like, when we look at where everyone's at going into the playoffs, it is obviously a lot of shockers, but it's definitely a mix of, I guess I'd say, red herrings versus, okay, there's probably just maybe four teams that realistically I think will win the Super Bowl.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah. It's a thing where, yeah, I mean, I would agree that the list is probably not too much longer than that, but just as an overall kind of a thing here, I'm going to start with something counterintuitive before I get to some of the counterintuitive takes that have been on this show in the last several months, and we'll see which ones have and haven't panned out. But this is my prediction going into the playoffs here. I know that, like, a lot of people are looking at this like, OMG, what is the NFL going to do ratings-wise without Kansas City in there? I think the way that this is right now, I think the fact that so many of the games are going to be so competitive. I mean, generally speaking, I mean, wild card weekend the last couple of years, like half the games are like, what are we doing here? Right.
Yeah.
I think the cumulative ratings are going to be up over last year and perhaps the year before and maybe the year before that, because there's just so much that can happen here. The games are going to be so competitive. The spreads are probably going to be much lower than usual, which is going to, you know, indicate to, you know, Joe Casual fan here that the games are going to be more competitive, more closely matched. I think the fact that it's more of a scrum this year, I think in the past the NFL has looked at brands to kind of carry it through the way that the NBA does and other leagues like that. I think this year, I think competitiveness is going to trump brands in terms of delivering ratings. How do you see it?
100%. And you have so many good storylines, and obviously that the way all these teams are, but both from like a storyline, and I agree with you that it's the parity is much better in this group that we're looking at for the playoffs compared to other years. I think we'll definitely see one of the two seeds get knocked off. That's my bold prediction going into wild card weekend. I just especially on the AFC side, like I don't know, that's kind of, those are a couple of my red herrings. I guess you could probably say the same thing on the NFC side. Like, honestly, the best teams on both, with the exception of the NFC, I do think the Rams are my Super Bowl favorite, unfortunately, but I mean, you got to call him like you see him. But outside of that, there's a lot of parity really in both conferences.
Yeah. And again, like the fact that I right now I have Philly as my 2 seed in the NFC, and all you've been hearing about over the course of the last 6 weeks or so is how much they've been struggling. So it's one of these things where the seeds, I think, on the different sides are going to be a little bit sort of misleading, because it's a thing where, and I went to look at it and see, like, the fact that it seems like schedule is playing a disproportionate role this year in the success of some of these teams. I will say, earlier in the season, FDH Lounge dignitary Ben Chu called it. He said, I think New England's going to go 14-3 with this schedule. I mean, and they're right in line to potentially be right in that ballpark there. And again, if you look at, it's available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com, the 2025 FDH NFL stretch run breakdown, statistical index that we have there. And when you look at it, I mean, New England, no surprise whatsoever, according to Pro Football Reference, 32nd in the league in strength of schedule. But you look also to Chicago, 31st in strength of schedule. And that tells you a lot about why they are where they are, because the rest of their statistics kind of show that they're going to be a team that's wildly overseeded, no matter where they're at. And I looked at it and I had a little bit of a hypothesis here, like, okay, well, a couple of years ago, the NFL went to the 17-game schedule, the extra out-of-conference game. So it used to be, if you were in a division, you played, well, everybody's in a division, it's not a question of if, but the division that you're in, you play 14 of the same 16 games as the other teams in the division. Now it's 14 out of 17. And I was like, is that possibly doing it? The fact that you're playing one more team where you're matched up with a team in the other conference, as far as if you're a third place team the year before, you played a third place team from that division. I don't think that's really the case, because I think it was like you played like 88% of common opponents, and now it's like 81%. I ran the numbers and it was like pretty close, but it was enough to make me kind of wonder, because this is in a year like this, as wild as it is, I don't remember seeing too many teams that are as schedule driven as the Patriots. And their fans aren't going to like that, but I mean, it's the God's honest truth. I mean, they've basically skipped playing just about everybody. You've seen a little bit of the same thing this year with the college football playoff. You've seen it, like, something like, you could be in the SEC, but somehow or another, you didn't play Alabama or Georgia or Texas A&M. So, like, in the NFL, it may just be a fluke that it's happening this year, but I don't remember too many stories like what New England and even Chicago are doing, based almost entirely off the back of the schedules. Both teams have been good. I think I picked both of them to make the playoffs at the beginning of the year. I know I picked the Patriots. I think I picked the Bears. So they've been really good, but they've been about as good as I thought they would be, but they're inflated based on basically, playing all these tomato cans.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's interesting. I think the schedules, like, obviously when you look at it, the stats for strength of schedule, it's interesting that on the AFC, like, the two, Denver and New England, have some of the worst schedules, and then who's on top over there? And it kind of goes, I think I said this at our season kickoff, the AFC there's much more parity. Like, there was no superstars in the AFC compared to the NFC. Like, the AFC kind of, like, obviously you have what we've had for a while with, like, the Bills, the Chiefs, who is it? Oh my gosh, I'm blanking.
Oh, well, Bills, the Ravens. The Chiefs,
the Ravens. The Ravens have been in there. Yeah. So, I mean, just all those, and then just been going at it. And then we kind of see how it shakes out this year. The NFC is just, it's very much a have or have not conference. You're either an absolute wagon of a team, or, you're bottom of the barrel, which we've already seen with, the teams that are mostly eliminated. I think Carolina was the only really weird one that kind of emerged out of nowhere in the NFC. But outside of that, it's sans the Cardinals, the entire NFC West, and then kind of the regular teams we've seen from the last few years in terms of who are the great teams right this year in the NFC.
Yes, and speaking of your Cardinals, it will not shock anybody to know that they are actually first in strength of schedule in the league, playing in that absolutely brutal division.
Yeah.
And as far as the NFC West being really, really strong, I mean, it's a bit of a surprise to me that it's been as strong and as dominant as it's been. But I think we all knew coming in it was going to be a really good division. But something that's been a real surprise, I think, to just about everybody has been the AFC South. Now, if I go back to my 2024 divisional previews here with Chris Galloway on the show, I said at the time, like, this is a little bit of a hipster take, but I think the AFC South is up and coming. I think they're going to overtake the AFC North. I mean, boy, have they ever this year. The AFC North is the worst division in football and by a good margin. But at the time, it was a controversial opinion. Fast forward to this year, and we were doing the divisional previews, and I said to Chris, well, I got to give a mea culpa on that one. Like, I think I was wrong about the South. I think that was that didn't age well. That aged like milk. So I'm writing off that opinion, only to have it be validated this year. It's how crazy it's been. And I thought that Houston would be the number one seed and would represent the AFC in the Super Bowl based on that. I thought the Houston would be a schedule-based pick for number one. So I guess I did see schedule basing coming into play a little bit here. But that division, the way that it's gone, and it's funny, if you look at our statistical index here, Indianapolis, there are some teams that are lagging indicators on here. And in fairness, I will say this, Dallas being 32nd in DSRS. They have been better defensively, especially against the run since making the trade at the deadline here. But as far as Indianapolis, the fact that they are still at this point, third in offensive yards per play, fourth in OSRS, it shows you how dominant they were in the early part of the season. Right now, they're reduced to trying to make it with Phillip Rivers at quarterback. But the AFC South has been really strong. They look like they're going to send three teams to the playoffs here. And the AFC West has, again, they've been pretty strong as well. I mean, the surprise is the degree to which Kansas City has fallen back. And I think, again, though, it's one of those things. When I ran the statistical index, I felt a little bit better about Jacksonville because when I saw on there, because part of me is kind of like, how are they doing this again? But then I saw that they're doing it notwithstanding being seventh in strength of schedule. So Jacksonville is one of the teams that's actually going out there and running through what's been a pretty brutal schedule, and they've really kind of earned it. I looked at like them possibly versus Kansas City of like, Kansas City's not going to make it, but are we sure they're not one of the seven best teams? Because there's always a team that gets left out where it's like, this team really should be in over this team. But then Mahomes goes down and it's like, okay, yeah, yeah. Kansas City, they're not one of the top 10 teams left at this point here. But it was, that's just what kind of a weird year that it's been, that the AFC South has basically overtaken the AFC West, which is really kind of weird because Tennessee and Las Vegas, it's kind of six of one, half dozen of another. But as far as the top three versus the top three, it's going to be the South, not the West, that looks like they're going to send three teams to the playoffs, which is insane.
Yeah. And it's definitely just a complete kind of flip of where we've kind of seen the divisions in the AFC the last five, 6 years. I think that the North completely imploding was just, mm-hmm. and obviously injuries were a big piece there. We all know yes. that, but mm-hmm. it kind of, I do think it's kind of interesting that, you know, tinfoil hat on that, you know, maybe there's a push to get Rodgers another back in the playoffs and everyone in the division gets hurt. I don't know. I don't think that actually happened, but it is a little suspect that Aaron Rodgers is going to be back in the playoffs. Oh, Burrow, got hurt. Lamar got hurt. Ravens most likely not going to make the playoffs. They could, though, not eliminated yet. But yeah, it's definitely been a weirder year for sure. And just the fact like the West just had this weird moment with the Chiefs kind of having the year they did. But I do think the interesting thing about the West, the AFC West, though, is that they are, I don't think any of those teams have a shot at winning the Super Bowl.
I don't think so either. And again, I mean, we saw a good game out of Bo Nix last week in a big spot, but we haven't seen nearly enough of that to really be able to trust him. Denver, as you alluded to previously, 29th in strength of schedule. And so they really are a team that's doing it on the back of who they've played and haven't played, which is weird because they're in a very competitive division, but you get outside the division, who have they played? Not really anybody as much. And, you know, in the NFC, again, it's been a really, really kind of weird season in a lot of these divisions. In the East, I will say, and this is where I give my guy Chris Galloway, doing our divisional previews, a lot of credit for going out on a limb because he saw something that turns out it would only exist for maybe about 2 weeks. And on this basis, and on the basis of the fact that the NFC East never has repeat division winners, he knew he had to pick somebody else. He figured, I went with the Eagles because I said, screw the history. I bet the Eagles are still head and shoulders above everybody else. And that is the way that it's materialized in the end, although I did pick Washington as a wild card again. Who knows if that would have happened with Daniels being healthy. But Chris picked the Giants because he thought sooner or later Jackson Dart's going to be in there and they're going to look more like.
You're too early because that'll be 100% be my pick next year.
Well, and he said, you know, on the strength of the defense, he was picking it on that. And that's where, again, I can't say that he was necessarily right about that because in looking at it here, DSRS 27th, 29th. They're 29th also in defensive yards per play, 18th in third down defense. So his reasoning wasn't necessarily exactly right, but he was figuring based on the defense and based on Jackson Dart getting in there. And I think Scatabo to a degree, he was looking at that as well. And again, there was a moment in time. Remember, again, they shocked the Eagles and got a big win. That was probably more about where the Eagles were at that moment in time as opposed to the Giants. But that's been a weird kind of a story. Detroit being a team that is on the verge of potential elimination here, despite, as far as the eye test will tell you, they're certainly one of the seven best teams in the NFC. But again, Chicago with that schedule, that's really kind of hard to beat here. Detroit, you would think, again, if you're doing the eye test, I mean, I would kind of take them over San Francisco, who looks more likely to make it than them. But it's one of those things where, again, this is where Robert Saleh has kind of rebuilt his reputation, getting to go back there and work with this defense. Bosa goes down for the year. Critically, again, you know, just losing key pieces, you know, here and there. And certainly the loss at middle linebacker, just devastating for that team. I mean, I wrote them off earlier in the year, but San Francisco has been able to stay in the mix here. So it's just really, really, really bizarre that, again, when I talked about this before, Kansas City may not be the team sitting home. In fact, they won't be at this point with Mahomes down where it's like, shouldn't that team be in the playoffs? But it looks like Detroit might be the leading candidate for that at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. And it's been a bizarre year with kind of Detroit's almost, I know Buffalo has two more wins, but it's kind of at times felt, both teams have felt very similar where it's like they should be winning more games than they are. And yes, as you watch them, you see the rosters they have. And obviously, you know, you think of past successes, but Detroit, it's just, should they be there over San Francisco? I'd probably say, yeah, but and they still have a shot, but it's definitely going to be a weird one. Green Bay is another one that I think it was massively underwhelming when you saw the success they had at the start of the season too, and then kind of just completely sputtered out. They'll most likely make the playoffs, but it's that's one where I'm just like, I don't know about that. Outside of that, the NFC in terms of, you know, who's going to come out of it, it gets pretty thin. The only teams I really could see coming out are LA and Seattle. Like I think everyone else is either like too banged up, or if they aren't, I don't know how they get past LA.
I do think when you look at it, I think that again, on our index, Seattle and LA have been the top two teams and by a good margin. They have flip-flopped, I think, from where they were at midseason. But they are at this point, again, still 1-2. Seattle 1, the Rams 2. And they're just head and shoulders above everybody else here because the way that it works across the different categories, long story short, go check it out for yourself, everybody. But as far as you add up the numbers from the different index categories here, and so it's one of these things where, again, the best numbers cumulatively are the lowest numbers. So you add them all up. And right now, so Seattle's first in the index. The Rams are second, but in the FDH power rankings, I've got the Rams first, Seattle second. But it's very close between them in the index. Seattle, 47 points. The Rams, 48 points. You jump down to the third place team, Houston, and they're on a tier of their own with 84 points. and Houston doing that almost exclusively off the back of their defense. And then from there to third tier, Denver at 100 down to the bottom of the third tier at number 14, Philadelphia 144. So it goes with the teams from 4 to 14, really all in kind of a clump here. And again, just in looking at it, it's been, and I've said before on the show here that, to use the old term from back in the day, that I've been a bitter clinger on Sam Darnold and somebody that believed that the Jets and the Panthers ruined him. And like, you know, is there a chance for him after that? I thought it was an open question going into Minnesota. Kevin O'Connell, the quarterback whisperer, saves his career. He goes to Seattle. It's been more of the same. So it looks like Kubiak might be up for a head coaching job off the back of that. And there have been a few moments here and there with, you know, some turnovers and everything, as there were kind of late last year. But Darnold has been really strong. Really, it's been JSN that's been the MVP candidate on that team there, I think, more so than him, as opposed to the Rams, where you could make a case for Nacua and Stafford almost equally. And again, that's sort of another subplot of this season as well, not just those two teams in the dominance, but you look at guys like JSN, Nacua. I mean, we know that it's probably going to be a quarterback in the end that gets MVP, although Jonathan Taylor's going to have a lot to say about that. But even down to Myles Garrett, who looks like he's going to break the single season sack record here, we have more candidates from non-traditional positions in the mix than usual. And that doesn't even include all the quarterbacks that are still in it. Josh Allen is still at least on the periphery of it. Drake May certainly right there at the center of it, et cetera, et cetera. So a number of quarterbacks, but a number of players from non-traditional positions, because I think if you go back, I think Adrian Peterson in 2012, I think he's the only running back since 05 with Sean Alexander that got MVP. There was a long time there where it was like, it could be a running back, it could be a quarterback. It's been almost exclusively quarterbacks for a long time to come, and the smart money's probably still on somebody like Drake May. But you look at teams here, and again, like, nobody will ever convince me that JSN shouldn't be right in the middle of the conversation, for example.
Yeah, that's fair. I just think with the, you know, the dual threat quarterbacks being basically the standard, the meta, like, I don't really see a world where a running back ever wins it again, unless it, you know, I mean, if Saquon didn't win it last year,
that's
like,
true.
I mean, someone's going to have like an Adrian Peterson type year. And I don't know when we'll see that again, but I mean, the MVP conversation is always interesting because it's like, in reality, or in what it should be, is different than what it is. What it really should be is the best, like the person that if you took that person off their team, the team would cease to exist. And they're in, like, obviously, you know, there's the stats and everything. I think that's why we see it continuing to be this kind of Josh Allen, Lamar we've seen the last few years. Yeah. But what it really ends up being is kind of like, okay, who's the best quarterback on one of the best teams? I mean, I don't know how you don't give it to Stafford. I mean, even when we're looking at your rankings and the way, like, how far LA and Seattle are from everybody else. Like, I mean, Darnold would be probably a good candidate too. I don't even know if he's, I don't know where he is on the betting odds. That might be a good dark horse pick, but yeah, the NFC, I mean, it's most likely going to be, we'll see how that, when Seattle and LA face each other, if it ends up working out where they can meet in the conference championship, or if they'll have, like, you know, an early divisional meeting.
Yes. And full disclosure, so we are taping this on the day that they're going to meet for the first time here. Amazon really getting lucky pulling that as a matchup here. I think a lot of people would agree with me and you, probably the top two teams in the league right now. But in looking at the playoff predictions that I have, and this is, again, the 2025 FDH NFL stretch run breakdown available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. I actually, in the AFC, I do have a couple of quote-unquote upsets the first weekend. I do have number 2 New England surviving number 7 LA Chargers, but I've got number 6 Houston over number 3 Jacksonville. That one I look to be a real dogfight all the way down to the end. Number 5, Buffalo over number four, Baltimore. I still just have a weird feeling Baltimore is going to get in there, but I'll pick Buffalo over whoever comes out of the North. I've got the 2 and 3 seeds advancing in the NFC, Philly over San Francisco, Green Bay over Chicago, and then Seattle over Tampa Bay. Whoever ends up losing the West is going to go in and probably just murderize Tampa Bay because they've looked a lot more mortal over the last several weeks. You get to the divisional round. Here's where it gets interesting. I've got number 6 Houston over number 1 Denver and number 5 Buffalo over number 2 New England. In the NFC, number 1 LA Rams over number 5 Seattle, number 3 Green Bay over number 2 Philadelphia. I picked Green Bay over Philly in the NFC championship game at the beginning of the year. Neither team has looked all that great at various points in time, but I'll stick with my original pick in that game. And then championship Sunday, number five Buffalo over number 6 Houston, and number 1 LA Rams over number 3 Green Bay. I have the LA Rams over Buffalo in the Super Bowl. And I think Houston is going to go almost as far as I thought they would at the beginning of the season. And at the beginning of the season, once the season actually started, I was like, oh, that's a hot take that hasn't panned out so well. But I think Houston, while I'm not picking them to go to the Super Bowl, I think they're going to make me look a lot better than I was looking in September here. So how do you see it shaking out in the different conferences here leading up to a championship Sunday and a Super Bowl, Derek?
Honestly, almost exactly the same. I think the one change I would probably have is I think if it's the Chargers, probably not, but I do think whoever's the 2 seed is going to lose wild card weekend, whether if it's Denver, if it's New England, if Jacksonville somehow gets there, like whoever's the 2 seed in the AFC, I do think is going to be upset. It gets a little tougher because I do think LA is kind of a red herring in terms of, like, should they be there? I mean, I guess, yeah. It all really just depends. But outside of that, I largely agree with everything else. I mean, I see the same sort of thing going all the way down. I think Houston has a very good chance of knocking off Denver in the divisional, that being like that crazy upset. Obviously, Buffalo knocking out off New England isn't that crazy to say. I think they've split this year in terms of in their games. Yeah. So, rubber match, I could see Buffalo doing it. And that, so, yeah, I mean, Philly and Green Bay, I think that's a coin flip, honestly, but
right.
And then, but at the end of the day, I think LA and Buffalo are probably going to be the two teams that are in there same as you. I'm going to hope and pray that Josh Allen finally does it and wins one. Especially can't let LA get another one. I'll lose it. But if there's any, like, Buffalo winning it all would be the just perfect end of the story. I'm curious if Indianapolis somehow gets in, do you think they can make a run or no?
I mean, look, they held up against Seattle a lot better than anybody thought they would. I mean, they came against an absolutely elite defense. They came a lot closer. Again, second in DSRS, first in defensive yards per play, and second in third down defense. It doesn't get any better than what Seattle's got. Although, again, Houston's close. First in DSRS, third in defensive yards per play, and third in third down defense. Again, Indianapolis was able to use Jonathan Taylor to keep Seattle honest to some degree, but it shouldn't have mattered to the extent that it did. So it's a thing where you could look at that and you could extrapolate and say, my goodness, what's he going to do against, non-awesome defenses from here on in? I don't look at it that way. I think Indianapolis would be one and done if they ended up making it in. I just don't think, again, they've got anybody there at quarterback that they would be prepared to go with. And as a matter of fact, we may end up, talking about, I hope that this isn't the case of where Rivers comes back only to get seriously hurt. But I mean, again, in terms of the reaction time that you need at 44 years of age, I mean, we may be looking at whoever's next up on the depth chart as opposed to him, hopefully not under really adverse circumstances like that. But it's a thing where, just in looking at this, I just wonder, and it's a thing where it's not always fair to do this. It's not always fair to put an asterisk on it, but it's like, if Buffalo makes it this year, which at this point, we're both picking them to do, but it's like, well, Kansas City wasn't Kansas City. Baltimore wasn't Baltimore. And like, did anybody else step up? But did anybody else step up in their absence? And it's like, you know, in the land of the blind,
Drake
the
one May, man Bo is- Nix, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Herbert, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, if he to come out of the AFC, even without Burrow, and if it wasn't Lamar, if the Ravens don't make it, even without Burrow, Lamar, and Mahomes, there's still a who's who of quarterbacks, whether it be the guys that we know are talented, or you know, this group of this, you know, Nix and May that are you know, having this ascendance. But yeah, no, I think Josh Allen, it'll be something talked about that, okay, he can only win when Burrow and Mahomes aren't there. That's a fair point. But I mean, coming out of the AFC, and if they beat LA in order to do it, that's as impressive of a Super Bowl run as I'd say any of Mahomes or even the one Burrow had where they lost ultimately, but got there.
It feels like it might be a little bit reminiscent of, to use the old wrestling analogy, that the Steelers would always pay off like the Jets or somebody to take out the Patriots, right? Like every Steeler Super Bowl appearance in the 21st century has an asterisk on it because they always lost to New England in the playoffs and yet mysteriously never had to play New England any of the times they went to the Super Bowl. Gee, funny how that worked out. So I can't help but wonder if it might not be a little bit the same with the Bills, where it's like, you know, because you're talking about the quarterbacks that are there. And yes, I mean, Drake May has really gotten to be pretty elite than some of these guys. I mean, Bo Nix is at this point, you know, serviceable on a good day, and on and on and on it goes. But it's like, as far as the teams that they played and the teams that they beat, I mean, it's a down year for the AFC at the top of the AFC here. So I just, you know, it's going to be. If they win the Super Bowl, I mean, I think that probably answers all the questions here. But it's like, if you come out of this pack of basically glorified mediocrity at the top, only to lose to the Rams in the Super Bowl, I don't know that the narrative really changes much on the Bills.
No, I agree. Yeah, if they get there and lose. I mean, if it's a close one, but if it's like, if it's a pretty handy win, like if LA kind of, mm-hmm. you know, beats them up a little bit, then yeah, I'd say the narrative doesn't change on Buffalo.
Yeah, it may not, but it will be.
Because I mean, they didn't change too much. The roster's kind of the same roster they've had with a couple small tweaks here and there. Like it's, I don't think it's a dynasty loading situation. I mean, I really don't see that anywhere. Like there's no, like if the Chiefs dynasty is dead, or at least taking a pause, I don't know where else we see it. Maybe Seattle.
Yeah. I mean, Seattle's, that's been a crazy story to me because they're a team that I just really didn't see coming. And I will say this, I mean, it's not often that I'm as far off as I was in the preseason on them, because I looked at that defense and believe it or not, I mean, as great as they've been, I looked at it on paper and I was like, gee, it seems like they got a couple holes here. It seems like they're relying on guys that I'm not quite sure they should be relying on. Holy crap. I mean, has it worked out way better than I thought it was going to? And that this whole turnaround that they've been doing, I thought this was maybe going to be a little bit of a gap year. Like, okay, because teams have been doing this, you know, recently where it's like, okay, we're going to kind of shed some salary here. We're going to kind of take a knee this season, come back strong the next season. And I remember saying, you know, toward the beginning of the year that I think – to whatever degree, I think there's a floor put underneath how much they may take a decline based on Mike McDonald, because this is a guy where, again, coming in, I mean, I've been a big believer in this guy the whole way coming in. And again, you see, I mean, Baltimore's defense, nowhere near what it was when he was there. And you look at what he's been able to do in Seattle, and it's a thing where I think we're still – there's probably still not enough people around the league talking about how great he is as a coach. But you know, certainly you get to the end of this season and a guy that's going to be a prime candidate for coach of the year, the front runner in my book,
more than Johnson.
That's close.
Bears have been I think it has to be him. What he's done with Chicago in just this season, like they were they've been the laughing stock. Seattle had it was like, but I mean, they just had that great year 2 years ago or whatever it was with Geno. Like Chicago has been bottom of the barrel for so long. They've shown flashes. They have the roster. I'll say that. But then obviously Seattle does too. And then what Ben Johnson does is 1 year is, I think, absolutely. I I knew he was going to be good there. I didn't think he would be this quick. And it's funny, before we leave the Seattle talk, I like special RIP to like all the Vikings fans that you had both. You had Darnold, you had Jones, and you gave them both away.
Yeah. Yeah. For McCarthy, who again, and again, this could just be, well, Rick, you were just saying that because your dad's an Ohio State season ticket holder and you've been to a bunch of games at the Shoes in your life. True enough, but I was also right when I said that J.J. McCarthy had no business being a first-round pick. I mean, I was saying that from my position as a longtime NFL draft honk, not as somebody that is, again, willing to take a whiz on Michigan the way that I am at the drop of a hat. But again, I was right about that. I mean, you know, had he demonstrated anything through the course of his career beyond being a game manager there, that's one of those things where, again, very, very, very strange, because Minnesota really doesn't take a whiff too often on the personnel end. You have to believe that O'Connell was in the room very, very strong on this one here. They're going to listen to him. Very, very odd that they got that one wrong. And it's going to be,
I don't know if we can say it's a whiff yet, because he's shown some flashes. I think we give it. I mean, because there's been enough talk that I've seen from scouts in that org that he does have it. And I normally don't listen to that, but I kept hearing that last year about May. And now we're seeing May do it this year, when I wasn't that hot on him. So if I'm running the team, maybe you do kind of bench him. I don't know what the plan is, but I'd say for us trying to assess, okay, is he a bust or not? I'd say you got to give him one more year.
Well, they're going to, just because they're kind of out of options. Yeah. I mean, they're not, it's too late to tell.
Well, Burrow's going, a lot of people say Burrow is going to request a trade, and Vikings and my darling Cardinals are the top two landing spots.
Well, that will be very, very, very fascinating to see how it plays out, because my guess is that the football fans of Cincinnati are going to be more discerning than the baseball fans in my hometown of Cleveland here, where anytime anybody gets priced out with the Tribe, oh, what a greedy bastard, as opposed to pointing the finger at ownership, which consistently refuses to let the moths out of the wallet and actually pay for anybody. Methinks in Cincinnati, the fans are going to be a little bit more discerning, and they're going to blame the organization, as they should, because it's one of these things where you don't just get a participation medal here for, like, we paid the quarterback. Guess what? In this league, and admittedly the wide receivers too. Okay. But you also have to have a defense, which outside of Hendrickson, I mean, who have they paid for on that defense anytime in the last 15 years? An offensive line, which is basically, you know, doubled as a shower curtain for the last several seasons here. So, I mean, like, paying the quarterback and one or two other big stars is the tip of the iceberg here. Like, Burrow's got a point, and it's not just that he's an honorary Bobcat here, as a guy who, you know, on an honorary basis, we claim at the great Ohio University here, notwithstanding our shame at the moment for the scandal going on there. But we claim Joe Burrow on an honorary basis as one of our own, so I feel bad for him. But he's got a very, very valid point. But he's going to be real hard to trade with that contract because of the dead money. I just had a friend of mine ask me today, so is there no chance of the Browns trading Watson at this point? I'm like, nah, dude, nah. I told you years ago it was a five-year handcuff, and so it still is. But in the case of Burrow, I think the handcuff is still there in terms of dead money, in terms of what it would take and everything like that.
We'll give him Kyler and three first-round picks. I would do it tomorrow.
Well, 100%. You know, after Watson and after Trey Lance, I think the whole three first-round picks has lost its luster a little bit. It should have after Herschel Walker, which, you know, I know before your time, but that was a thing. But that should have been the end of three first-round picks as soon as that
deal. It worked for L.A.
I guess so.
They traded away, like, all of their picks when they got Goff.
Well, and
not
I was
Goff, Stafford.
Yeah, when they traded away Goff, and that's a thing where – I hate to put this out into the world, but I mean, this is one of these things where, I mean, Stafford having, I mean, by far a career year, by far the best year of his career at what, age 37? Like, I just hope we never hear anything down the road that sort of tarnishes this season at all. Cause it's like, it seems inexplicable to me, particularly a guy that had a bad back coming into the season, supposedly.
Rodgers had, what was it that his MVP season, I think was what, 5 years ago, 2020, where him and Devontae Adams, like, were going off.
Yeah, but the baseline of his career versus the baseline of Stafford's career, you know what I mean? Like Rodgers is a guaranteed first ballot Hall of Famer. Stafford's like, yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. You know, there's a difference there. So to have by far the best year of your career, even if it's at a comparable age, you know, that's, you know, a season for the ages at age 37. Like, I mean, are we going to find out that some of the things you take to help your back may have some other effects here, knowingly or unknowingly? I mean, I'm not dragging anybody through the mud here, but it's like, we live in a cynical day and age, okay? I mean, as somebody that lived through the whole thing with the credulous media in the late 90s, it's like, it's a modern miracle. Barry Bonds and these, how are they doing? It's possible to have a second prime in your late 30s. Modern science is incredible. Like, I lived through a very credulous media period, Derek, and maybe it's making me a little bit too skeptical.
Oh, but we've seen it too recently with Brady. Like, I mean, obviously it's Brady, but yeah. Even Peyton's that first year in Denver, I think he was, yeah. I forget how old he was. I think he was either end of 30s or right early 40. Yeah. And I mean, obviously set the record. Like, so I don't think it's incredulous what Stafford's doing. I think honestly, I mean, it's the combination of that roster is incredible. McVay continues to be one of the best coaches in the league. Yeah, so I wouldn't overly worry about that.
Okay,
I think the coaching pieces across the league were really, I think we finally settled into a year where coaching matters. And I don't mean, like, I know we've kind of always said that, but it feels especially true this year. We already talked about Chicago. We already talked about Seattle, what McDonald, what Ben Johnson are doing. And then, you know, you look at the NFC West dominance. Why is it that way? Obviously, McDonald being the kind of the new one there, but Shanahan and McVay are just the two of the best. And you kind of see that collapse now in Washington. Everywhere Cliff Kingsbury goes, they have at least one or two good years, then completely fall apart. Granted, he's the OC, but like, it's the coach and Sean Payton. Obviously, Vrabel is doing the New England success did not shock me. I always knew Mike Vrabel was gonna do well there. The fact that Tennessee kind of at the first sign of trouble dropped him, I was like, all right, that's a little crazy. But, you know, it's – and even Jacksonville, that's another one. So it's definitely a coaching matters sort of year. I think people are starting to realize it more.
It is, yeah. And I think going forward, McVay, McDonald, Shanahan in the West, I think when you're looking at, you know, if there was any kind of, you know, remnant still left of NFL films, that's something that in 10 or 20 years they'd be doing a great retrospective on, something like that. Like, remember in the 2020s when these guys started this rivalry? Because it's like, I can see all three of them being there and coaching a lot of very, very, very consequential games against one another over a period of time. And really, the two-thirds of that with Shanahan and McVay, they already have, including an NFC championship game. So, I mean, they've had a great rivalry there. You insert McDonald into it, what he's doing in Seattle. And, yeah, that's going to be something to watch over a period of time. So, any other thoughts you had about how the season has developed here, Derek, this crazy and chaotic season, as we've been saying?
I think the most interesting thing to me outside of like what we've already talked about is kind of where, if we're talking about the non-playoff teams, what happens in this upcoming draft, which I know we'll obviously do that preview at some point, but
yeah,
it's definitely an interesting start because several of those teams did draft quarterbacks and it would kind of be wild for them to do it again. I'd say really it's the Raiders or the Cardinals that are really the only candidates for taking like a Mendoza or anyone else. I mean, Mendoza to me is the only one that's absolutely
QB
day one ready. Yeah.
Everyone else.
No.
Love that kid. He's going to be a big star. The Jets, I would say too, although I wouldn't wish that on anybody, but he could end up with the Jets. You know,
that's true.
Yeah, oh, that's gosh. Oh, if they do to him what they did to Darnold, I mean, that would be a national tragedy. I mean, that's
yeah.
Because I think he's an even better prospect than Darnold was. And I thought Darnold was a great prospect coming out. That's the guy I was pounding my fist for, number one, for the Browns, back before the Browns completely cauterized my interest in them as a franchise. But I would have taken him over Baker. And I think, you know, history has shown that's probably about a coin flip as far as, you know, where they're at. But
where are you at with Shadur? Now that I haven't heard.
Well, I don't really care, but I mean, it's a thing. As far as what do I see? What I see is that he has some promise. He has some upside, but I mean, as far as, you know, still, you know, holding on to the ball as long as he does and everything. Now, again, holding on to the ball more than 0.2 seconds behind this absolutely pathetic offensive line, it is a little hard to judge him. And that, like, you know, when your best receiver is Jerry Jeudy, who I've been clinging to for a long time as far as, like, he's going to show what he can do at some point. Yeah, no, I'm out on Jerry Jeudy. I mean, that's like his whole thing of, you know, here, take the ball when he was about to catch a touchdown and it turns it into an INT single-handedly. So there are things where it's hard to judge him as far as how that goes. But I mean, the Browns, again, their ineptitude knows no bounds. They can't even suck enough to get Mendoza in the draft, which if you had the chance to get him, you should absolutely cast aside Shadur Sanders. Failing that.
And Dylan Gabriel. And I think the other seven quarterbacks they have on that roster.
Yeah. And like nobody else in the league had a third round grade on Dylan Gabriel. I mean, so that was ineptitude on their part too. So, I mean, it's a thing where I don't think he's going to be any kind of prominent NFL quarterback in the years to come. It is a little bit hard to judge him because of some of what he's dealing with there. And I said at the beginning of the year too, and I was absolutely right about this. If there's a team in the league that was the least suited to handle the media circus that would come with taking him, it's the Browns. Like, if you're the toxic sludge pit that they are, and it's funny, I actually live relatively close to where the practice facility is and have to drive by there once in a while to get to some of the places that I go. So it's always funny to just snicker as I drive by. But like, of all the teams in the league, you have no margin of error for toxicity or controversy or whatever. You're the Browns. Like, they should have had the self-awareness to, like, even if he slipped into the seventh round, like, wait a minute, we're the Browns. We can't afford everything that comes with this. We can't afford all the Barnum and Bailey's crap. Which, again, this team lived that. As far as the single-minded locust fans invading your fan base who only care about one player, hello, Baker. We lived through that in this town with his idiot fans from Oklahoma. I don't care about anybody on the Browns, but I do care about Baker Mayfield. Like, how do you let this play out twice in 5 years? You know, only the Browns could do that. So, yeah. You know, yeah. It's just of all the teams in the league, they're the last team that should have looked at doing this.
And Manziel before that, obviously.
Manziel before that. Yeah. Yeah. Like every 5 years, give or take, it ends up being the biggest media circus that you can possibly have. And it just, and that's the whole thing. And because of that, because you keep perpetuating that, You're the franchise that, like, needs to go a good solid 20 years before you invite another media circus. Yeah. But again, it's a thing where if you have a front office and, more importantly, in this case, an ownership that believes in something for nothing, then you can do that. We can absorb this. No, you can't. There is no something for nothing. You're not going to extract whatever amount of talent you see as being there without having to deal with everything else that comes with it. More of the same. But again, you know, as you alluded to before, it is going to be a great NFL draft season coming up, a very, very interesting one. And I will put out there for the first time here today that my hope is to do as we did last year here with the show. And the plans are presently for a coast-to-coast draft night show. So hopefully we can get you in for that one as well here. We did it with 9 of our folks last year. And what an amazing, amazing experience it was to do this with everybody. So looking forward to doing it again, year 2 on the show here, night 1 of the NFL draft. So we'll have that coming up. And another football thing in the near future, which I'll be actually mentioning to you off air in a moment here. So, again, love covering the NFL with you, Derek. Thank you so much for being here today. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1891.